From 1964 to 1972, the wealthiest and most powerful nation in the history of the world made a maximum military effort, with everything short of atomic bombs, to defeat a nationalist revolutionary movement in a tiny peasant country, and failed. When the United States fought in Vietnam, it was organized modern technology versus organized human beings, and the human beings won. In the course of that war, there developed in the United States the greatest anti-war movement the nation had ever experienced, a movement that played a critical part in bringing the war to an end. It was another startling fact of the 60s. In the fall of 1945, Japan, defeated, was forced to leave Indochina, the former French colony it had occupied at the start of the war. In the meantime, a revolutionary movement had grown there, determined to end colonial control and to achieve a new life for the peasants of Indochina. Led by a communist named Ho Chi Minh, the revolutionists fought against the Japanese, and when they were gone, held a spectacular celebration in Hanoi in late 1945, with 1 million people in the streets, and issued a Declaration of Independence. It borrowed from the Declaration of the Rights of Man and the Citizen in the French Revolution, and from the American Declaration of Independence, and began, "All men are created equal. They are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Just as the Americans in 1776 had listed their grievances against the English king, the Vietnamese listed their complaints against French rule. "They have enforced inhuman laws. They have built more prisons than schools. They have mercilessly slain our patriots. They have drowned uprisings in rivers of blood. They have fettered public opinion. They have robbed us of our rice fields, our mines, our forests, and our raw materials. They have invented numerous unjustifiable taxes and reduced our people, especially our peasantry, to a state of extreme poverty. From the end of last year to the beginning of this year, more than 2 million of our fellow citizens died of starvation. The whole Vietnamese people, animated by a common purpose, are determined to fight to the bitter end against any attempt by the French colonialists to reconquer their country." The U.S. Defense Department study of the Vietnam War, intended to be top secret, but released to the public by Daniel Ellsberg and Anthony Russo in the famous Pentagon Papers case, described Ho Chi Minh's work. Ho had built the Viet Minh into the only Vietnam-wide political organization capable of effective resistance to either the Japanese or the French. He was the only Vietnamese wartime leader with a national following, and he assured himself wider fealty among the Vietnamese people when in August-September 1945 he overthrew the Japanese, established the Democratic Republic of Vietnam, and staged receptions for incoming Allied occupation forces. For a few weeks in September 1945, Vietnam was, for the first and only time in its modern history, free of foreign domination and united from north to south under Ho Chi Minh. The Western powers were already at work to change this. England occupied the southern part of Indochina and then turned it back to the French. Nationalist China, this was under Chiang Kai-shek, before the Communist Revolution, occupied the northern part of Indochina, and the United States persuaded it to turn that back to the French. As Ho Chi Minh told an American journalist, "We apparently stand quite alone. We shall have to depend on ourselves." Between October 1945 and February 1946, Ho Chi Minh wrote 8 letters to President Truman, reminding him of the self-determination promises of the Atlantic Charter. One of the letters was sent both to Truman and to the United Nations. "I wish to invite attention of Your Excellency for strictly humanitarian reasons to following matter. 2 million Vietnamese died of starvation during winter of 1944 and spring 1945 because of starvation policy of French, who seized and stored until it rotted all available rice. 3/4 of cultivated land was flooded in summer 1945, which was followed by a severe drought. Of normal harvest, 5/6 was lost. Many people are starving. Unless great world powers and international relief organizations bring us immediate assistance, we face imminent catastrophe." Truman never replied. In October of 1946, the French bombarded Haiphong, a port in northern Vietnam, and there began the 8-year war between the Viet Minh movement and the French over who would rule Vietnam. After the communist victory in China in 1949 and the Korean War the following year, the United States began giving large amounts of military aid to the French. By 1954, the United States had given 300,000 small arms and machine guns, enough to equip the entire French army in Indochina, and $1 billion. Altogether, the U.S. was financing 80% of the French war effort. Why was the United States doing this? To the public, the word was that the United States was helping to stop communism in Asia, but there was not much public discussion. In the secret memoranda of the National Security Council, which advised the president on foreign policy, there was talk in 1950 of what came to be known as the domino theory, that, like a row of dominoes, if one country fell to communism, the next one would do the same, and so on. It was important, therefore, to keep the first one from falling. A secret memo of the National Security Council in June 1952 also pointed to the chain of U.S. military bases along the coast of China, the Philippines, Taiwan, Japan, South Korea. Communist control of all Southeast Asia would render the U.S. position in the Pacific offshore island chain precarious and would seriously jeopardize fundamental U.S. security interests in the Far East. And Southeast Asia, especially Malaya and Indonesia, is the principal world source of natural rubber and tin and a producer of petroleum and other strategically important commodities. It was also noted that Japan depended on the rice of Southeast Asia, and communist victory there would make it extremely difficult to prevent Japan's eventual accommodation to communism. In 1953, a congressional study mission reported, "The area of Indochina is immensely wealthy in rice, rubber, coal, and iron ore. Its position makes it a strategic key to the rest of Southeast Asia." That year, a State Department memorandum said that the French were losing the war in Indochina, had failed to win a sufficient native support, feared that a negotiated settlement would mean the eventual loss to communism not only of Indochina, but of the whole of Southeast Asia, and concluded, if the French actually decided to withdraw, the U.S. would have to consider most seriously whether to take over in this area. In 1954, the French, having been unable to win Vietnamese popular support, which was overwhelmingly behind Ho Chi Minh and the revolutionary movement, had to withdraw. An international assemblage at Geneva presided over the peace agreement between the French and the Viet Minh. It was agreed that the French would temporarily withdraw into the southern part of Vietnam, that the Viet Minh would remain in the north, and that an election would take place in 2 years in a unified Vietnam to enable the Vietnamese to choose their own government. The United States moved quickly to prevent the unification and to establish South Vietnam as an American sphere. It set up in Saigon as head of the government a former Vietnamese official named Ngo Dinh Diem, who had recently been living in New Jersey, and encouraged him not to hold the scheduled elections for unification. A memo in early 1954 of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said that intelligence estimates showed a settlement based on free elections would be attended by almost certain loss of the associated states, Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam, the three parts of Indochina created by the Geneva Conference, to communist control. Diem again and again blocked the elections requested by the Viet Minh, and with American money and arms, his government became more and more firmly established. As the Pentagon Papers put it, South Vietnam was essentially the creation of the United States. The Diem regime became increasingly unpopular. Diem was a Catholic, and most Vietnamese were Buddhists. Diem was close to the landlords, and this was a country of peasants. His pretenses at land reform left things basically as they were. He replaced locally selected provincial chiefs with his own men, appointed in Saigon. By 1962, 88% of these provincial chiefs were military men. Diem imprisoned more and more Vietnamese who criticized the regime for corruption, for lack of reform. Opposition grew quickly in the countryside. where Diem's apparatus could not reach well, and around 1958, guerrilla activities began against the regime. The communist regime in Hanoi gave aid, encouragement, and sent people south, most of them southerners who had gone north after the Geneva Accords, to support the guerrilla movement. In 1960, the National Liberation Front was formed in the south. It united the various strands of opposition to the regime. Its strength came from South Vietnamese peasants, who saw it as a way of changing their daily lives. A U.S. government analyst named Douglas Pike, in his book Viet Cong, based on interviews with rebels and captured documents, tried to give a realistic assessment of what the United States faced. In the 2,561 villages of South Vietnam, the National Liberation Front created a host of nationwide socio-political organizations in a country where mass organizations were virtually non-existent. Aside from the NLF, there had never been a truly mass-based political party in South Vietnam. Pike wrote, "The communists have brought to the villages of South Vietnam significant social change and have done so largely by means of the communication process. That is, they were organizers much more than they were warriors. What struck me most forcibly about the NLF was its totality as a social revolution first and as a war second." Pike was impressed with the mass involvement of the peasants in the movement. The rural Vietnamese was not regarded simply as a pawn in a power struggle, but as the active element in the thrust. He was the thrust. Pike wrote, "The purpose of this vast organizational effort was to restructure the social order of the village and train the villages to control themselves. This was the NLF's one undeviating thrust from the start. Not the killing of Arvin, Saigon soldiers, not the occupation of real estate, not the preparation of some great pitched battle, but organization in depth of the rural population through the instrument of self-control." Pike estimated that the NLF membership by early 1962 stood at around 300,000. The Pentagon Papers said of this period, "Only the Viet Cong had any real support and influence on a broad base in the countryside."